This is episode 398 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, August the 20th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation since 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 398 of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, tech stocks are on the move, some on the rise and some in free fall. Is this indicative of the respective company's future prospects? We'll tell you who's going which way and why. As well, technology and cultural differences are at the crossroads in some countries, and top-level domains seem to be quite controversial in the Middle East. The Olympic Games are done and dusted, and the host broadcaster, the BBC, have broken all records when it comes to Olympic data. Next month, September, is a big month for new tech gadgets and software. There'll be announcements, launches and updates coming thick and fast from all corners of the universe. So we'll keep you updated on who's doing what and when on the show today. Adam Turner turns his attention to Microsoft's new operating system, Windows 8, and compares it to the current OS, Windows 7. And Lena will be back on deck today to help keep us up to date in the world of gaming. So stick around. First up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is successful in his application for diplomatic asylum. A new MPEG format paves the way for ultra-high-def television. Microsoft's Outlook.com gains traction. A suspended jail sentence for publishing an offensive Facebook page and previously undiscovered pyramids found thanks to Google Earth. Welcome to Tech Talk News. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is now at the centre of what some might describe as a perfect storm, which has evolved from political, diplomatic and legal interests across at least four countries. The 41-year-old editor-in-chief and founder of WikiLeaks has been holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for 2 months now after breaking bail conditions to request political asylum on the grounds that he is being persecuted. Ecuador's Foreign Minister, Mr. Ricardo Patino, told the BBC on Friday Mr. Assange would be granted diplomatic asylum, but he's not allowed to make political statements that could affect Ecuador's relations with friendly countries. But in a highly controversial response to Ecuador's announcement, Britain insists Mr. Assange will be arrested the moment he steps outside the embassy. Here's the British Foreign Secretary, Mr. William Hague.
The United Kingdom does not accept the principle of diplomatic asylum. It is a far from universally accepted concept. Diplomatic immunity exists to allow embassies and diplomats to exercise proper diplomatic functions. And the harbouring of alleged criminals or frustrating the due legal process in a country and the host state is not a permitted function.
The series of events started after Mr. Assange allegedly raped and sexually assaulted two women in Sweden in 2010. Mr. Assange subsequently moved to England. Later in 2010, Swedish authorities issued a European arrest warrant to extradite Mr. Assange to Sweden for questioning over the alleged assaults. Mr. Assange's Australian lawyer, Geoffrey Robertson QC, told ABC News Breakfast that Australia could do more to assist Mr. Assange.
The obvious country, the country of Mr. Assange's nationality, hasn't been involved. And so it may be an opportunity for Australia to get involved on behalf of its national and see if it can square this circle, because I think all well-intentioned people would like to see Mr. Assange go and face down these charges in Sweden.
Mr. Assange and his legal team say that any prosecution in Sweden will likely result in further extradition to the United States, where Mr. Assange says he is wanted for publishing confidential military and diplomatic cables on the WikiLeaks website. To other news this week, the Moving Picture Experts Group, or MPEG, has outlined a new video compression standard to deliver the same video quality in half the bandwidth of the current H.264 standard. The draft standard is called High Efficiency Video Coding, or HEVC, and also known as H.265, and was agreed on at an MPEG meeting in Stockholm in July. An MPEG spokesperson said the new standard would have an enormous impact on the industry, and that MPEG expects HEVC to be finished in early 2013, with amendments in 2014. Just 2 weeks after its launch, Microsoft says the new Metro-style webmail service, Outlook.com, has already attracted over 10 million subscriptions. The Hotmail replacement has been described as having a Windows 8 Metro interface mixed with the functionality of Hotmail, with large tiles for navigation instead of traditional text-based hyperlinks. Outlook.com can import contacts from Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, and Twitter, as well as users' existing Outlook email accounts or spreadsheets. All that's needed to log into Outlook.com is an MSN-based email account. A Victorian man convicted of publishing offensive material about women on Facebook is appealing his sentence in the county court. 21-year-old Joshua Turner from Bendigo set up a Facebook page which rated the sexual performance of women and made sexually degrading comments about girls as young as 13. He was arrested by police and charged with using a carriage service to offend and using an online information service to publish objectionable material. The magistrate banned Mr. Turner from using Facebook for 2 years and imposed a 15-month community corrections order, which included 150 hours of community service. A 6-month prison term was also wholly suspended for 2 years. Mr. James Dowsley from the Law Institute of Victoria spoke on ABC's PM program last week. Mr. Dowsley said it was important for courts to send a strong deterrence message to others.
We have seen over the last 10 years Parliament catching up and putting legislation in place to try and create fences to protect the general community. It means that you have to be very careful about what you place on your sites and what you do in terms of exercising any sort of comments on Twitter or Facebook or those type of sites, because obviously it's traceable and it can end up in very serious criminal offences.
Mr. Turner's legal team lodged an appeal against the severity of the sentence in Victoria's County Court last week. And an online archaeologist believes she has found 2 undiscovered pyramids in Egypt with the help of Google Earth aerial photography. Satellite archaeology researcher Ms. Angela Mickle, on her website, says that one of the complex sites contains a distinct, 4-sided, truncated shape that's approximately 140 feet in width, and that the site contains 3 smaller mounds in a very clear formation, similar to the diagonal alignment of the Giza Plateau pyramids. Egyptologists and researchers are now planning an expedition to visit the sites. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Have you ever noticed on a website that they'll often quite happily show you the last 4 digits of your credit card number?
Big brother, no, it's not the answer.
No, it's not.
Never has been and never will be.
Ouch.
Ouch.
Yeah.
What happened to this?
You found an ISP that understands.
Thanks for that, by the way.
This was no ordinary hack.
Why not log in with your Facebook credentials? Why not log in with your Yahoo credentials?
Exactly.
It will bite you in the bottom one day, and you will live to regret it.
You're creating RF interference for everybody else in the entire universe, and it's just wrong.
The imbeciles that designed and built and constructed the bike ticketing system.
Ask someone who cares.
It's like buying a new car without tyres, and the manufacturer says, it's roadworthy ready.
Yeah.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio.
I love it when you push the buttons in here and turn off the speakers in the studio before we go to air, and everyone goes into a mad panic. Hello, everybody. This is Tech Talk Radio. Welcome to today's show. Dr. Ron.
Hello there. Welcome to this week. Yes, how are you?
Oh, yeah, good. I've had another week of technical dilemmas, but...
You're having a bad run at the moment.
I finished. No more. Finished my bad runs.
Switched everything off and you've gone home.
No. Well, yes. New power supply. Fixed a lot of things.
Did it? Okay.
Anyway, that's a long story, but we'll talk about that later. Lean's is back. Hi,
Lean. Hey.
How you going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, good. That's got rid of that sniffle?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Gone. We missed you last week.
Oh, thanks. I missed being here too, but I just wasn't up for it. Sometimes you're just not up for it.
Nah, told Dr. Ron he shouldn't have licked your back.
Yeah, see? Yeah,
see? It's all your fault, Dr. Ron.
That's the problem with this studio in winter. We just keep, the one germ just stays and keeps coming around and around and around.
It's a bit like an aircraft, isn't it? Everyone behind the cockpit of the aircraft gets recycled air. So whatever's in the air, everyone gets.
It's just a round robin of infection, really.
Yep. We should wash these little microphone covers.
The little wind socks.
Bring your own. Go and get your own and bring them up, slop them over.
Yep.
Yeah. Graham, hello.
Hello, Andrew.
How's tricks?
Yeah, going all right.
Oh, that's good. That's good. How's your technical dilemmas of the world?
Yeah.
Haven't got any?
No, I have got one, but it's still waiting to see what the resolution is before I really go to town on a carrier.
Okay. Oh, carrier. Ooh.
Mm.
Anyway, he's a fix-it man. That's what you do for a living. You fix things.
Yes.
Build and fix. Is this fixable, or should we wait till the next show to find out?
Well, only the carrier involved can make it right.
Ah, okay. Well, that's... Yes. Speaking of carriers and telcos, I was quite disturbed during the course of the week to find out that Telstra is the only carrier that can do location-based early warning SMSs to mobile phones.
Yes, that's right. I saw that in the news.
And if you're on Optus or Vodafone or... I think that covers everything now, doesn't it? Three's gone.
Yeah, or a resold network of
if you're on a carrier
that someone that resells Optus, for example.
Yeah, don't go into the bush this summer. It'd be a tip from the Tech Talk Radio crew. Keep away from dangerous situations.
Well, don't expect to rely on any early warning alerts to your mobile telephone services because you won't have any.
Do you think though, people in those areas are probably all with Telstra anyway because you can't get reception with anyone else?
You can't assume that. You can't assume that. But if you're in an area, stick with someone with Telstra. And if they're running in one direction, go that same way.
Or have a look around you once in a while and listen to the odd radio broadcast.
Yes.
And have the CFA app pay attention. On your phone.
But technically speaking, around Australia, I would have thought that it wouldn't be too difficult. Because doesn't a phone log into a base station and the base station or the network then knows where you're logged into? I don't know. Am I too simplistic or too naive when it comes to how mobile phones communicate, phone home, so to speak?
Well, I'm tempted to say no, you're not. What you say makes absolutely perfect sense, but I'm not a mobile phone technician either, so it might be that we'd have to talk to... where's Mark? Mark?
Where's Mark? I don't know.
Mark,
maybe
tell us.
Maybe we could ring him
Mark
up during
know.
The show.
The panelist formerly known as Mark Diggins. He'll know.
He knows these things.
He'll definitely know. He knows everything about phones.
Can someone send him a text? We'll call him up. Oh, dear. All right. Yeah, other than that, interesting week all around. The Olympics are finished, done and dusted. Mm. Is that why you're a crook? You're home watching the...
No. Oh, okay. No, Channel 9 won't let me watch the Olympics.
No, well, that's true.
No, it's just it's hard to find what you want to watch.
Oh, she's just having a jab.
Yep.
Speaking of that...
I did not like the coverage one bit.
You weren't the only one. Lots of people on Facebook walls agree with what you just said. But and we'll probably talk a bit about this later. Excuse me. The BBC broke all bandwidth records over the past couple of weeks.
With the closing ceremony? Or with the Olympics in general?
In general, yeah. And I must admit, I did notice that from my point of view on the telco that I'm with, the internet slowed down a little bit. There were problems, but when the problems weren't there, the internet had slowed down. They were going back to normal again now. And the chatter on talkback radio in this city on the mainstreams about geo-blocking and removing said geo-blocking was incredible.
Yes.
Like, it's becoming commonplace out there. People starting to listen and know about these sort of things.
Well, if the BBC Olympics coverage has done nothing else, it's certainly increased the awareness in the general community of how to do things
correct.
Like that.
And if you do have your geo-blocking un-geo-blocked, September 1, 7:30, BBC One, Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
Series 7.
When it goes to air on
series
the BBC.
7. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning for us, but nonetheless, there you go. It's had all sorts of really good reviews and hypey sort of things, and I think they're heading over for the big premiere. They did it in cinemas, and it's feature film quality, allegedly done for a TV budget, so I'm quite looking forward to seeing that. And for those of you who don't care, September, we've got so much happening in September. We have iOS 6 coming out. We have new gadgets from most of the major manufacturers coming out. Doctor Who premieres on September 1. The Big Bang Theory is back on September the 27th.
Free Play Independent Games Festival?
Yeah. Microsoft's? No, they're not quite there. That's the next month after that, I think. So, yeah, look,
Can I buy an iPhone 5 in September?
Pretty much. The big announcement is coming out. The new 7.5-inch iPad, the announcement will all be made around then as well. Lots of photos.
I'll be getting an iPhone 5.
Will you?
Mm-hmm.
What have you got now?
I've got an iPhone 4.
And it's time to move on?
Yeah, well, I got a 3 and not a 3GS. And I got a 4 and not a 4S. So I'll go a 5.
A 5.
So you're going to stand in line or are you just going to wait until they... permeate the suburb. Did you know?
I'm
sorry,
not sure yet.
Hang on. This is the most speculative I've ever heard you be.
I know,
there,
isn't
there
it?
There is no iPhone 5. It doesn't exist.
She hasn't heard it officially yet.
My contract's up, so.
Me too.
Mm. But
what should
no
I get?
iPhone 5.
Well, there's about to be.
But you never speculate on things that don't exist yet.
You've broken
your own rule.
Only when it's things that Steve Jobs himself had said would never happen, then I'm a little bit skeptical about whether they would let him roll in his grave or not.
And now for something completely different.
She's speculating.
I am.
Just, it's good.
I thought I'd try it on, see what it's like.
Why not?
No, I think.
Can I try on a half-size iPad?
No, I won't speculate about that. Because Steve Jobs said it wouldn't happen. So I'm like, unless I see it, it's not going to happen.
I saw a very interesting thing during the course of the week on TED. You know what TED is?
The TED Talks?
The TED Talks?
Yeah, they're great.
Remix. Everything's a remix. Go and have a look. I showed it to Dr. Ron. The other night, I got to sit down and watch the whole thing before I talk about it on the radio. But it's about copyright and plagiarism. You know how Apple and all those guys are in the courts at the moment chasing patents and he said, she said, it's me, I did it first, prove it. Well, it doesn't just start in the tech world. It goes right back to the music world, to the earlier stages of music and early, Bob Marley's, and I'm not saying him in particular, but way, way back then. And everyone pinches a bit from everyone else and. Everyone plagiarizes and all cool until your old stuff gets plagiarized.
That saying, real artists, what is it? Good artists do something, real artists steal. Like it's just put your own spin on something that you've
already
seen.
I'll see if I can find that quote during the course of the show. So anyway.
That's what Steve Jobs said, wasn't it?
I think he did, actually.
He did.
Yeah. Probably said something like
just
that.
Don't steal our stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you search YouTube for TED Talks, is that right?
And yeah, I'll get a link. It's YouTube. It's on Vimeo. It's on a lot of things like that. And I'll get you details in a sec. But meanwhile, Dr. Ron, I think it's your turn.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Lots of correspondence this week after a slow Coro bag the week before. Danny from South Morang says, hi, team.
South Morang.
South Morang.
That's otherwise known in our circles as South Sydney.
Just up the road. I almost drove through South Morang today. I was working in Seymour.
I saw you. You sent me a glimpse.
That's right.
Were you Michael Mallon? It's a trick question.
That's right. Yes, you did. And I answered it correctly.
You got it correct.
Glimpse.com is what Andrew's referring to. It's a really good location sharing service. Danny, however, says, hi, team. After last week's chat about MyKey and credit card receipts.
Oh.
This week I decided to check my receipt after recharging my MyKey. Everybody in here was somewhat incredulous to learn that in mainstream media it was reported that MyKey actually printed not just one or two or three
most
or
of
four
the digits.
Digits of your credit card number. They printed something like 12 or 13 or 14 numbers and your name and everything else. And we said, no, that can't be right. They can't seriously be doing that. Yes, says Danny. As you mentioned last week...
Did they wait the expiry date on there just for convenience?
Well, wait for it.
Oh, no.
It's printed. The type of card, whether it's MasterCard or Visa, my name, gender, as on the card. I think that he means like, Mr. or, whatever your salutation
title,
is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why would your gender possibly matter when buying a train ticket?
It's bizarre, isn't it? The first six digits and the last three digits of the card number. So that's 9 of 16 digits, I guess. And the expiry date.
Oh, please tell me they printed the CCV
as well.
He doesn't say that, Graham, but who would know? Also, the MyKey machine at South Morang Station did not give me an option to say yes or no for a receipt.
Oh, someone told me this.
It just printed out two receipts and an FPOS receipt, which printed all of the above details, and another one for the MyKey top-up.
Too bad if your train's about to leave and you've got to hang around to get your receipt so someone can
that's
nick
the thing.
Your thing.
I missed a train topping up the MyKey. And it asked me whether I wanted a receipt or not, and I said no. And I'm sort of, stomping my little feet going, come on, hurry up. And it's saying just 1 second, processing, printing receipt. And I said, I didn't want a receipt. So I've pressed, I've taken my MyKey off, and then it said transaction cancelled. And I'm like, oh, God. So I missed my train. And it asks you if you want a receipt, and if you don't want one, it prints one anyway. So I have no option than to give that kind of information out. And I ran to try and get the train, and must have left the receipt in the machine then.
No!
Oh.
So I've got that information at a train station in Melbourne.
So potentially somewhere, a piece of paper with your name and 9 of 16 digits of your credit card number and your credit card's expiry date is just floating around.
Fun.
Out there. It's good. Also, says Danny.
Jeez, Mikey.
I had a MyKey auto top-up set with my credit card. The setting was...
That sounds fraught with danger.
Well, it's a bit like other people do it as well, like CityLink comes to mind. You give them your details and auto tops up. The setting was so that whenever the balance dropped below $10, to top up with $50. That makes sense. Last week when I tried to touch on, which is the expression MyKey uses to...
That's
to,
where you
to
go
enter the
wave
system, you wave your card in front of the reader. In a Melbourne City tram, the MyKey terminal displayed declined. Please contact MyKey on... And the telephone number. Because my card was declined, I had to buy a 2-hour Met card for the journey. Boo. Later, I called MyKey. I was surprised about what the representative told me. My card balance had gone below $10. They tried to do an auto top-up, and for some reason, it couldn't go through.
Didn't they have the credit card details on file?
They blocked my MyKey card, preventing me not only from using the card, but preventing me from topping it up. The interesting thing, however, is that they cannot unblock the card. Now I have to mail my card to an address in Melbourne.
Yes.
And wait up to 7 working days to receive it back unblocked.
Yes, I heard this on the radio and they copped plenty, the man from the ticketing system, because this is ridiculous.
When I heard this from the MyKey representative, I didn't believe it. So I called MyKey again the following morning to speak to someone else, and another representative from MyKey confirmed this. By the way, I later checked with my bank. I had enough funds and the bank never received a request from MyKey to top up my card. Anyway, I enjoy listening to your podcast every week. Keep up the good work, Danny.
Thanks,
Danny.
Yep. And then as a result of their incompetence with doing that, you end up getting beaten up by the goons they have enforcing whether you've got a ticket or not.
They get rugby tackled.
You do. They're absolutely outrageous. The people that design this just don't think about how people need to use it. It's not even a thought.
And why can't, like, if we have to go from Met card to MyKey, why can't I use my MyKey to buy a muffin? You know, in Melbourne Central or at Spencer Street or something.
Yeah, use it as a general currency card for the city.
Like, yeah, just to put, you know, $40 on it for the week and use it for your travel and swiping it through to get the paper or swiping it through to get... Why can't I do that?
Touch it on a parking meter or something?
Yeah, that'd be cool. But this is just such a waste of money.
And there's so many off-the-shelf systems that would have just worked.
Yeah, we didn't have to make a whole new one from scratch.
No. The one that comes to mind is the Oyster card system in London. I know that had its problems as well, had teething problems, but it existed, it was installed, it probably handles, 10 times or 100 times the number of transactions that MyKey would on a daily basis with the population of London, but no.
I just find it just amazing that technology is just so wrong. They can't get it to work in such modern times. It leaves me speechless.
Apparently, it all comes down to the fare structure that Metro have.
Well, change
have
it.
Put in. Yeah, so be less greedy, perhaps, or make it all Zone 1. You know, that kind of thing. Surely, there's a better way to do it.
Anyway, enough about bleating about local transport.
Rob via the contact form says, "Hey team, just listening to the discussion on Google getting in trouble for altering Safari, etc." Says Rob. Google got into trouble for their cookie, bit of a cookie fiasco.
Older Safari,
they used a
security flaw in Safari
with cookies. Apparently, says Rob, Euro web devs, that's code for European website developers.
Euro web devs
are scrambling as the law changed recently, whereby all European sites must state in their terms and conditions on their site what cookies they use. Big fines if they don't, but big expense if they need to alter a big website. Ciao, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. Steph, via the contact form, says, "Hey, guys, I'm a Perthian."
A Perthian?
We
as opposed to Perthlings.
We prefer the term Perthvert.
I think Perthvert is the preferred. it's a form of affection, Steph. Yes. It's okay. And have been listening to the show every week via podcast. Thanks for doing the show. You think, Steph? No dramas. Just a correction. Uh-oh. On a comment Lena made about XBMC.
Yes.
Running on the Apple television.
I did get this wrong.
It's not a Microsoft product.
No, it is not.
It is an award-winning, free and open source software media player.
Yep.
It was originally developed by the open source community to run on Microsoft's Xbox and turn that into a proper HTPC media center. Since then, it's been evolving and today it runs on Android, Linux, BSD,
Mac OS X, iOS, and Microsoft Windows operating systems.
And Raspberry Pi.
100%. Oh, yeah.
And Graham Pi. And Raspberry Pi. Have you got XBMC running on your Raspberry Pi?
Yes.
It's great, isn't it?
Awesome. Yes. This is news. This is terrific news.
And wow. I asked him at the head of the show how he'd been going, and he kept this one a secret.
It certainly did.
Oh, well.
You didn't have it running last week, though. You would have told us.
I've been tinkering. Yeah. I did a lot of tinkering, not this weekend, but on the weekend before that. So, yeah, it would have been before the last show. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I've done a lot of tinkering. There's two different distros for the Raspberry Pi that are both XBMC systems. They look identical once they're up and running, but neither of them is quite 100% ready for prime time just yet. But I can see the potential in the system, and I think as they smooth out the wrinkles, it's going to be very good. But XBMC really impressed me, actually. It's made me, if it doesn't become smooth on the Raspberry Pi, I might get a little box just to run XBMC on, because it just looks like such a good system.
It is, yeah, it's really nice.
Now,
yeah.
You said, I think off-air last week, that there was a new build coming out almost daily from the guys that were developing the distro for... Raspberry Pi, the distros?
There's the two distros that I'm talking about, yeah, that run this program. Yes, there's daily builds for those and lots of development activity. And the XBMC team themselves are optimizing the product for Raspberry Pi. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, there's lots of work going on in it.
Just for the benefit of people like my father-in-law.
What's
a Raspberry Pi? Is it like a BlackBerry Pi?
Raspberry flavors? Raspberry Pi is a
hi Bob.
A miniature computer designed for tinkerers. It's probably, you hear people compare it to a phone or to a credit card. It's too thick to be a credit card. It's probably about the size of a pack of cards is probably the best way to describe it.
And about
it.
The same size too, isn't it? It'd fit the deck box, wouldn't it?
A bit longer, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It's got
printed circuit board.
Yep. It just comes with printed circuit. It doesn't even come in a case. It doesn't come with a power supply or a keyboard.
It comes with nothing.
No, it comes...
Plastic bag?
It comes in an anti-static bag in a cardboard box, and it has two USB ports, an Ethernet port, an HDMI port, which is fantastic, that to connect to your fancy television, or it has a old composite video port to connect to your old-fashioned television, a audio out socket for connecting a sound system, or it can do audio through the HDMI as well, and a power supply connector and a slot for an SD card.
RaspberryPi.org, that's PI, yeah. If you want to go and have a look at it.
Yeah, Raspberry PI, that's right. Just search for that. You'll find lots of information about it. Yeah, and they're fantastic. They're $35 it costs, but you've got to then buy a lot of things to go with it to make it a practical system. But what you buy to go with it depends on what your application is going to be.
Mm.
So you can buy a case if you need a case. You buy a little power supply, or you might have one already that's your mobile phone charger, depending on what sort of phone you've got, because it's just a standard micro USB 5 volts in. And, yeah, SD card, you can buy whatever size you want. You know, it costs $5.
Have you worked out what you're going to do with yours yet, or are you just going to play with
it? Well, at the moment, I'm tinkering, yeah. I've got another one on order, and, yeah, there's any number of things I can do. I mean, for me, they'll be great just to make little web servers or little proxy servers or little, you know, DNS servers and things that you can drop just to do little jobs here and there.
Lena, you were going to reinvent the Space Invaders gaming table, yeah. I think, was your...
A MAME cabinet.
Project?
Yes.
Yeah? Is that still on the cards?
Eventually, yeah.
Eventually?
Yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun, actually.
It would be good,
I remember those good old days.
MAME is an emulator that runs in Linux to emulate those old video game machines. Arcade games. Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
Like Space Invaders or Pac-Man or all those sorts of things.
Yeah. Especially, I went to Game Masters again this weekend to the exhibition at Acme. At
still
Fed
going
Square.
Down there?
Still going till October.
They're still not charging on the games?
No, but I walked through down the exhibition again this weekend and spent a lot of time in that little arcade bit. It's fantastic. It's the first part that you walk through, and they've got wood paneling on the walls to make it really feel like the old arcade. And
a bit like this.
Sounds exactly like that.
Yeah. The Galaga and all those great things, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no,
sorry,
they're
Graham,
great. You should definitely go and have a look if you haven't already.
Very good.
Thanks, Steph.
Sorry, we're doing Coro. Back to you, Dr. Ron.
Steph says it's a must try. Xbox Media Center, a must try for anyone looking at building a media center. Regards, Steph. Thank you. Keith, via the contact form, says, hi, I'm about to go to the States. Obviously, depending on prices, but if I purchased an iPhone or iPad 3G over there, or an Android phone, etc., will they work in Australia, please? Keith.
Yes, no, and maybe.
Yeah.
That covers it all, Graham. Well done.
I agree with Graham.
I agree with Graham, too.
There's a lot that's an hour's discussion there, Keith. To break it up into the Apple camp and the Android phone, etc. camp, as you say there, I'd say...
It all comes down to frequency and technology used on that frequency,
doesn't it? It does. And my gut reaction would be the way that Apple control pricing and the parity at the moment with the Australian dollar and the US dollar, I'd say buy it here.
Absolutely.
You've got local support. You know it's guaranteed to work on the networks here. You're not going to have any issues.
And if you wait for one of those specials, and one of those retailers, and if you're looking at even if you go the previous model, there's some great deals to be had out there.
Mm. There's two things that could stop a phone that you buy in one jurisdiction from working in another. One is what Andrew said, the frequencies that are available. So the most common is that in Australia, you probably want to connect to Telstra's Next G network, so that needs 850 meg HSPA or that series of standards. The other is whether the phone is SIM locked or network locked.
Yeah, so welcome to the US. Be careful there, because they SIM lock.
They do. So some phones that you buy, even if they have the right frequencies in, might be locked to only work on, say, AT&T or Verizon or whatever your carrier you buy it from. So there's two parts of the system that you can get tripped up on there. The iPhones definitely have all the right frequencies for Australia, but they might be SIM locked to the network over there.
And just be wary, we're rolling out LTE, 4G. And chances are it'll be on a different frequency over there as it is to here. I think they're on the 700 meg over there, and it won't be on that here.
Yeah.
Not yet. So if you're looking for long term, I'd buy here, as Dr. Ron said.
But yeah, for a lot of phones, you're just going to have to do the research on the specific phone model. And there are sites that will tell you exactly what frequencies it has and whether it's locked or not and all that sort of stuff. So spend a lot of time with Google, start understanding the frequencies and the standards that are used by your carrier and by each individual phone model, and make sure you do your research.
Because unlike the Apple handsets, if you're buying a handset that runs Android, there are a number of different manufacturers that make phones that run Android.
That's
so
right,
you might have
yeah.
HTC, you might have Motorola, you might have Samsung,
yep.
Blah, 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 so on and so on. Keith, hope that helps.
But even within the manufacturers, each different model might have different frequencies and different standards in it.
So. Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So the upshot was, buy one in this country if you can with the pricing, much safer, longevity, all the rest of that sort of stuff.
But then you've got to be careful the other way. If he wants to buy it in Australia and use it in the US, then he has to be careful to make sure that he buys one that's compatible with what the US networks use.
Yeah, yeah, but you'll probably find they fall back over. Depends where you spend most of your time. When I was in the States, I took my 3GS with me, and that roamed on every single network over there, from AT&T to Sprint to everything, Mobile T, what do they call themselves? And
T-Mobile.
Or
buy a burn phone. Get over there, hop off the plane, spend $30. Just get a cheap and nasty, candy bar phone and a prepaid SIM.
And you have a local number over there, a 650 number or something,
yep,
if you're in California.
Throw it away when you're coming back. Yeah,
I've still got mine, in case I want to use it next time. Because AT&T doesn't change much. In fact, sorry, I was reading this during the course of the week. Carriers, everyone, like AT&T, I think, is the equivalent of, let me not try and get myself into trouble here, but the lesser carriers over here that everyone has complaints about being overcrowded and call drops and all that sort of stuff.
Oversold?
AT&T. There's some carriers now paying up to $400 US to churn you away from AT&T onto their network.
Wow.
So that's, yeah.
On the other hand, for Australians, AT&T's network, their 3G and 4G network, is the same as Telstra's Next G network. Same frequencies, same standards. So quite often you'll find that the phone that works on Next G here will work on AT&T over there.
Keith, I hope that helps. I hope it helps in some small way. Last but not least, this week's correspondence, Carl, via the contact form, says, hey team, sorry, I haven't written in a while, but I have been listening. We hope so, Carl. We really hope so. Now, Lena, says Carl.
Ooh.
Many times in the past, I've been on your side
mm.
when the panel has had iOS versus PC debates, but on the topic of a potential new dock connector.
Mm.
You sound like a climate change skeptic.
Ouch.
Carl, ouch.
Ow.
Straight to the burns unit.
My feelings.
There are so many reliable sources saying that Apple will go with a new connector. Mm. For those of us with various devices, clocks, docks, speaker systems, charging cases and cables, this change is a big deal and is worth discussing, not dismissing. I don't think we dismissed it, Carl, but we did discuss it. I'm sort of with Lena in I don't think it is as big a deal. I think if it needs to be changed, if Apple thinks it needs to be changed, just as any manufacturer thinks a connector needs to be changed, then they will change it. Connectors have got a usable lifespan, whether it's 6 months, 12 months, 10 years. But eventually, we need to move on. We need to do new and better things and different things. I understand
all those Apple people crying over a new connector, when every user of every other type of phone and technology in the world has to deal with this every single time they get a new device.
Well, we're
and Apple users have had to do this once in their lifetime, and they're having a big cry about
it. We're on our third iteration of USB, I think, aren't we, at the moment for PCs and other things.
I'm having a big sook, says he as he holds up his new laptop over here. There's only Thunderbolt on the side of it, so you have to get an adapter for everything. An adapter for a LAN, an adapter for FireWire.
But on the other hand...
Who uses FireWire anymore, honestly?
Come on, Andrew.
Seriously.
Seriously, move on. The rest of the world has.
Now, hang on. No,
Avid, are you listening?
The Thunderbolt connector is a fantastic connector it's standards-based. Basically... running inside it, running one level inside Thunderbolt is DisplayPort and HD and DVI and all those standards. So it really is a standards based connector. It's a very good development. I'm not sure that you should be complaining.
I'm not complaining about. I'm just complaining about the lack of other things.
You've just got to the future a bit before the rest of us.
Carl's on your side, Andrew. He says, why, for example, would Apple remove something as useful as an Ethernet or a FireWire port on a MacBook Pro just to make it thinner?
It's not just to make it thinner. It's that our use for those things is going to get lower and lower and lower, and they're looking into what we're going to need to do in a couple of years' time.
What real-world advantage, says Carl, is they're making a pro laptop 4 millimetres thinner at the expense of still much-used connectors. Yeah, I agree. It's not, with Lena, it's not really FireWire and Ethernet these days. Mm. Yeah.
There are a few legacy things out there. Like, one of the reasons why I need FireWire is because I plug it into an I.O. box, an input-output box for editing. Because if you don't plug it in... things like encoding software, like, what do you call it? Or any of the video encoding software, thinks that you've only got two channels. And it's only until you plug it into a device which says you've got more than two channels that actually lets you do more than two channels.
But that's a pretty niche use of a MacBook Pro. Not everyone who owns a MacBook Pro is going to be connecting it to an I.O. box
it also
and editing
seems to me to be a
commercial video, are they?
Seems to me to be a failure in the software. Why can't... If you just need to encode 16 channels or whatever it might happen to be...
4 is a good number, Graham. Left and right for on air. And then another left and right, which is the M&E, which is just without the talking in it so they can put subtitles and silly things on.
Just to get back to Carl...
Yeah, back to Carl.
Sorry, Carl. Call me a climate skeptic. I've got to fight back here.
Have you? You've got solar panels.
You have right of reply.
I want to have solar panels on my roof. I understand what you're saying. It should be discussed, but by the same token, I shouldn't have to feign hysteria over this thing that may or may not happen. That's the thing I have a problem with: is people expecting me to be mad when I don't even know if I have to be mad yet. So I'd like to wait. And hold my madness until it's appropriate.
Now, Carl's point was that there's lots of very reliable sources that are saying, you know, it's being manufactured. Yeah. It really does exist in the real world.
Yeah, I think it's gone beyond the speculation thing. I think it's...
Yeah, but I still don't... I don't know. I just don't care until I have to care about it. You know what I mean? It's worth discussing and everything, but I'm not going to have a hissy fit now and then turn around and, if it doesn't turn out to be the case, look like an absolute fool.
Now, this is the same Lena, ladies and gentlemen, who was so excited over getting an iPhone 5 that also doesn't exist yet.
Well, that's been happening at the same around this time of year for the last 4 years.
Chances are,
so the chances are high.
That's what they said last time, and it wasn't.
iPads every April.
Yeah. It's fairly reliable when it's a product that's been coming out for a couple of years.
Be a 4GSX or something.
I'm skeptical over the changes that are happening for the first time, but not the ones that are pretty reliable and have been happening for ages. I think if we didn't get an iPhone 5 this year, I would be amazed. I would be super surprised. I'd be aghast.
Aghast. That's what people were saying last year, and we got a 4GS.
Hmm. No, I wasn't saying that about last year. I always knew there'd be a halfway iteration. There's always a halfway iteration.
Is there?
Yeah. The 3, the 3GS, the 4, the 4S, the 5, and then there'll be a halfway iteration, and then there'll be a 6. That's just how it is.
Regards, Carl.
Thanks, Carl. Keep them coming. Carl.
That's all our correspondence this week, Andrew. You know how to contact us.
And feedback. Climate change is real.
At tech.radio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Just a couple of other things that came past. I got a letter today from the telco company. I got it the other day. I lie. Last month, in fact, from Telstra, saying that some changes that may affect your mobile service. I had one of the old mobile phones which was not 3G compatible or wasn't showing up on the 3G network. And as a result, it was on the old 2100 meg network, which is the older network that Telstra were running here.
The first iteration of 3G.
And they used to share it with Three, who are also no longer. I had to pop over to my father-in-law's place during the course of the week and change his APNs from Three across to Vodafone because of...
Okay, so there's the settings in the phone to make it work properly on the network.
Yep. Yeah, because Three have now been assimilated into the Borg and no longer exist. Not unlike Telstra's old 3G 2100 meg network, which the letter says, they state the service number and the model and the IMEI number, and basically they say it's not compatible with the 2100 meg network, and we're making changes to the 3G 2100 network as of the end of this agreement to share it with Vodafone Hutchison. So they're going to be doing all that, and we'll be unable to access the network via a Telstra SIM.
Ah.
So there you go. If you've got an old phone and it doesn't work as of the end of the 31st of August, you'll know why. I thought I'd share that with you. I think we've spoken about that before, though. We're going to turn that off.
Yeah.
It's getting very close
there's
now.
There's been a lot of media coverage and alarmist nonsense about, oh, everybody's phone's going to stop working.
And if you use Telstra, read this, it's urgent.
It's just rubbish. It's only a very few phones that exist from a long, long time ago.
In other news, remember how we spoke of... You're right there, Doctor.
I'm good.
Don't fall off the bench.
No. I'm drunk again.
Sorry, you had to be here for that. He put his elbow on the bench and
slid right off.
Nurse.
Yeah, very much. Remember how we were talking about Australia Post and they're going to go digital for their mail delivery, the digital post box?
Yeah, but they've done a big deal with Telstra and all that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, someone's beaten them to the punch.
Exactly.
And now Australia Post have been finding themselves in the courts trying to say, no, this is our gig. Yours is not true. But the court has basically said, no, Australia Post, you have no monopolistic approach here. And as a result, it failed in its bid to have rival digital mailbox service in court over claims of trademark infringements. And obviously they're getting a bit narky of them trying to cash in on the postal giant's name. So here we go. We're all going to start getting digital post boxes very shortly for things like bank statements, you know, secure delivery type sort of things, which would traditionally come with our conventional postie, because they're too busy doing eBay stuff now. They don't have enough capacity for bank statements.
Well, I can understand what they're trying to do, but I don't think they've quite hit the mark, though.
It's almost like they've said... Oh, these internet people want to do this thing, and they've not asked any internet people what they think.
Yeah.
You know, the kids these days are doing everything on the internet, so let's do this. And all the internet
people can have an internet too?
Yeah. One internet, please.
It's a strange thing. It's a service that they're going to introduce so that they can digitally deliver bills and accounts. Mm. I mean, we have technology already that can do that. It's called, you know, you can either log on to a provider's website and you can look at your account digitally, or you can have stuff emailed to you. This is just another service, I think, that's going to deliver these sorts of accounts. I don't really see
the point. Just need a billing address and the last four digits of your credit card to get in.
Yeah, that's all you need.
So just hang around the railway station.
Yeah, hang around the railway station and log into someone's mail. So
it's all
good.
Are
we cynical or am I cynical? Sorry, conspiracy.
No, we're being realists.
All right.
It's crazy, really. But I don't understand this, and... Yeah, Australia Post.
It's like they've just realised, if only we had some mail that was electronic.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
We could call it mail-e
mail
for electronic or something.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's a useful service. Like the product name sounds like, you know, they'd be opening your mail and scanning it and sending it to you electronically or something like that. Yeah. That would be almost apart from the privacy issues that we'd have to flesh out, but it would almost be useful, but I can't see this being useful.
Would almost be useful.
Well, you know, if I said to you, Andrew, you're never going to get another thing in the letterbox, you can take your letterbox away from the front of your house, you're never going to get anything paper ever again. If you want stuff that you normally get now by conventional mail, you go to this website, log in, and Australia Post, if anyone actually sends you anything physically, other than like a parcel or something, like a letter...
I was about to ask about parcels.
You can still collect parcels from the post office, but they'll scan letters and correspondence, and you can go and log on and read it. That'd almost be useful.
Yeah.
Right. Almost.
Yeah. Mm. Well, eBay's pushed in that way, I'm sure. They've got so much to deliver these days.
Well, ironically, they're busier than ever, because they're delivering all this stuff that people are buying online.
Top-level domains, TLDs. Remember how we spoke recently about how everyone was pitching in to get .whatever, .apple, .microsoft, and all that sort of stuff? Well, the majority of Australian applications have gone through and have been unopposed, because you have other people, like if you were what's that GUI that Microsoft have renamed?
Metro.
Okay.
Metro.
So if you were
Metro.
If you were .metro and someone else was Metro, then they could say, no. And anyway, this honeymoon period.
There might be Microsoft and a train network in Paris and a cash and carry joint in Germany all bidding for the same name.
Yeah, because they're global. So anyway, as a result, Australians' top level domains have gone through relatively unscathed, and they include .afl, .amp, .anz. I won't go through them all, but I'll give you a few others.
Is it .lena? No.
Hang on.
Nothing.
I can't see that, so it must still be available.
You are unsuccessful.
Bye bye.
Anyway, it goes on. .latrobe for uni and .monash for the unis. .nab, .rmit, .sbs, .seek, .7, .tab, .webjet, .woodside, just to name a few for Woodside Petroleum. But the ones that didn't get through, three.
If my mail, were there? What were they?
Well, one was .best, which for best TLD, whoever they are. I don't know who they are. But the interesting ones were .cba, .combank, and the U-Butte, better deluxe one, .yellow pages. So Telstra looks like they're going to be up against a plethora of other yellow pages globally.
Naturally.
That want that top-level domain. So they're getting closer.
But ANZ got through. They got theirs through.
ANZ? ANZ got theirs through. The NAB got theirs through. CBA haven't had a good, they've got, Commonwealth Bank got .netbank through, but they didn't get .cba, nor did they get .combank.
If my mail server got an email from info@anz, it'd blow it into outer space, it'd spam it
You'll have to revise. Yeah, well, because it doesn't exist at the moment, that's a good reason. When those domains exist, you'll have to make sure your spam filter is aware of what's going on in the world around it.
Very true.
I'm wondering what CBA might stand for, apart from, can't be bothered.
Bank.
I don't know. Probably what you call them, Dr. Ron.
The Communist Bank.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Anyway, lots more to talk about as the show progressed this evening, including whatever happened to Sol Trujillo? Anyone know?
He returned to Mexico.
He did.
It happened as all grumpy people, they slowly disintegrate.
Yeah. I'll tell you what happened to him after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Time for the stock market report in the tech world.
Ooh.
Apple going gangbusters. Because you know that every time Apple bring out a new phone, they actually manage to sell the same number of all the previous phones of the new phone. So we're looking at the iPhone 5 coming out, and the iPhone 5 will sell, according to reports, the same total of all the iPhone 4s, the 4Ss, the 3s, the 3Gs, all put together.
I have to be careful here about what I say. I'm going to get
slapped. Why are you moving away from Lena at the same time as you
say? Hey, look, he knows when he's going to say something stupid before he says it.
Graham has insight.
He's growing. They grow up so fast, ladies and gentlemen.
Certain people who buy Apple iPhones and things like that.
Yes, make a sweeping generalisation. Go for it.
Certain, not all. Let's limit it a little bit. Have a little bit of religious fervour about it.
Or we have 2-year-long contracts that run out and you buy the same
phone.
And
you buy a new phone 2 years later. Well, that's another
right.
Yeah.
Too.
But yeah, one, I'd say.
There are certain people out there, it's probably not everybody, that do just because it's the new Apple phone that have to have it.
Hmm.
Anyway, according to the Wall Street Journal, Apple stocks have hit an all-time high as investors anticipate the iPhone 5 and the iPad mini.
Mm-hmm.
Just over $648.
Yeah, $648.19. Wow.
If I had a time machine, that's the one thing I'd do.
Go back in time and buy yourself a couple
Apple
of shares.
Yeah. Yep. I would buy Apple shares.
Yeah, buy a quarter of an Apple. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Very nice.
Anyway, that was an all-time high that they managed to do, pushing Apple's market capitalization back above $600
billion.
$600 billion.
Billion dollars.
They're so big, these numbers, you can't under-anticipate. Now, on the other hand, Facebook. From one end of the world to the other, or from one extreme to the other.
Lost how many billion
sad
dollars?
Sad but true. Investing your savings in Facebook was a really bad thing to do.
I could have told you that before they flew.
Yeah. Last Friday, they closed down at $19.
Oh,
nearly half
Lord.
The price that they actually floated from.
Oh, gosh.
Mark, what have you done? Hopefully you haven't got any. Gee whiz. Wouldn't that be a worry? Why do you laugh, Graham?
Schadenfreude.
He's over there. He's giggling away, cackling away to his heart's content.
Yes, precisely right, Lena.
All right. In other interesting news, because the Olympics are over, the Olympic data, the BBC, you may or may not be aware of, depending upon which rock you have been living under in recent days.
The British Broadcasting Corporation.
Yes, those who set the levels, the benchmarks for all others to try and achieve.
Yes, and have done for centuries.
Yes. I was trying to convince...
Centuries?
Almost.
Almost.
Well, you'd include radio in that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. The radio stuff is just sensational. Mm. The Olympics broke records in respect to data requests and data bandwidth. That is the amount of data that was consumed in a particular period of time. Because those bits and bytes have to get out of the plumbing somehow.
So this is how much data did the BBC send to people all over the world to do with the Olympics?
Okay. All up... They sent 2.8 petabytes of video data to viewers on a single day.
2.8
single
petabytes.
Day. How much is that, Graham? What's a petabyte? Petabyte? Is it
petabyte
or peta? Thank you. It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's more than a little bit.
Is that like 2,800?
I'm not sure which pronunciation is correct.
Yeah?
For petabyte?
Anyway, the BBC delivered more than 2.8 petabytes, petabytes, whichever side of the river you're born
Peter.
On. Yeah, Peter.
It's only one T, isn't it?
Yeah, one T.
Yeah.
Which isn't too bad, which was record traffic. Record traffic. Now, they don't go into saying where people consumed this, because this would be an interesting statistic to see people who consumed it internally and externally, based on what they could work out, because that would be quite an interesting sort of statistic. But anyway, there were 8 streams, as you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was the main switched output from BBC One, and on television you could go and watch BBC One, Two, Three, or Four live, depending upon what was on at any particular point in time. Then there were the 8 channels. Now, I'm assuming that these were the same 8 channels that Foxtel pushed out over here in Australia, and the NBC, I think, was the broadcaster in the United States. They did the same thing. Anyway, they had some amazing viewing statistics, and if you actually break it down in a sport-by-sport basis, there was quite an interesting sort of ramp in the curve. It started a bit of a J curve. It started off low and ramped up and ramped up and then hit the medal of that particular sport and then fell back. But if you look at, say, the tennis singles finals with Serena Williams and Andy Murray, that Sunday. Their requests and connections were 820,000, just short of a million requests for bandwidth on that particular day. The cycling, because of course all the Poms did very well in the medal tally, finishing third this time round. Bradley Wiggins winning gold in the men's cycling, 729,000 requests for bandwidth. So I think without going into great detail about it, there's plenty online if you want to have a bit of a look and see. But I think it's quite a the BBC needs some accolades thrown at it, that they could handle that amount of data being thrown out, and the networks in the UK, whoever it is that was providing networks, could actually deliver it.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Now, and it just comes down to good planning.
It does.
Marky Marks pulled us up on something in the chat room, and I think he's got a valid point. The Olympics are not over yet.
Oh.
We have the Paralympics coming up.
We do.
Very good point.
That is a very good point. And it's also Serena Williams. Not Sienna Williams.
Sorry. I like football.
Yeah.
Tennis? What's tennis? Sienna Williams.
Yeah, well, anyway, they know. So, yeah, the people in our chat, they know.
Now, to answer your question that you asked before, Marky Mark.
Oh, yeah, Peter or Peter?
That I don't know, but petabyte.
We used to have a beach house in Peter Court.
Okay, what was the number? It was 2.8
petabytes or petabytes.
Okay, now a petabyte is 10 to the power 15, or the Peter prefix is 10 to the power 15. So what you do, if you want 2.8 petabytes, write down a 2 and an 8, and then write 14 zeros after it.
It's 1,000 terabytes a petabyte.
Okay. So well, it's still lots.
Well, if you want to be ultra-simplistic about it.
Well, people don't understand what you're saying, Graham. God, come on.
Isn't a thousand...
Cut to the chase. Okay, so you start with a byte. 1,000 bytes is a kilobyte. 1,000 kilobytes is a megabyte. 1,000 megabytes is a gigabyte. 1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte. And 1,000 terabytes is a petabyte.
My goodness.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Warlock's going through it on the chat room too. It's good to see it written down because I'm totally lost.
Thanks,
I hate numbers.
What are the scores in the chat tonight? What are
look
they
up,
doing over there?
Look up SI on the internet.
That's the French thing. SI units of measurement.
Yes, SI units. Yep. Yeah. That's all based on that.
Very good. It
doesn't just work for bytes. It works for meters and liters and all kinds of other things
grams?
That you can measure. Yes.
Mills?
Kinda. I have to say kinda with grams.
It doesn't work for time. Time is one of those measurement systems.
Time
that's
is
on
an
its
illusion.
Lunchtime, doubly so.
Thank you, Douglas Adams.
You're welcome. Don't start that in here, for goodness sakes.
Thanks for all the fish.
Sol Trujillo. Otherwise, the chaser really...
Oh, that's right. A house fell on him.
Did a great...
What happened?
Are you saying that Sol Trujillo was a wicked witch?
I am.
Oh,
I don't like grumpy people.
He's gone back to the land from whence he came.
Mm-hmm.
And
which was not Mexico, by the way, just for those who were
apparently
stirring up trouble.
According
he's
to
an American.
Yeah, that's right.
The United States.
Anyway, you can have him back because guess what he's trying to buy now?
What?
Former Telstra boss, Sol Trujillo, is said to be working on a private equity deal to buy the fourth largest cellular telco in the United States, otherwise known as T-Mobile.
Oh, no.
So you T-Mobile people, watch out.
Run for the hills.
You're about to get trio'd.
Yeah. We've got some great comedy sketches. Make sure you log... I don't know... They'll be on YouTube. Just look for Chaser and Sol Trujillo and have a really good laugh. The Bloomberg reported a deal in the region of US $30 billion, which is just a tad shy, around about 28 billion Australian dollars on current market value, which, if true, would make Trujillo's latest move the largest leveraged telco buyout ever. Wonder if he's going to take his mates with him. You know, Burgess, remember him?
Yes, Mr. Burgess.
And who was the other?
Phil Burgess.
Yeah, Phil. And there was another one, the three of them. And I can't remember the third one. He was the first.
Would you say they are the three amigos?
Friends? The three friends.
Warlock's got it right in the chat room, but I can't say that on the radio.
Yes.
That's what you got to search for on YouTube, and you'll be suitably impressed.
Yes.
Anyway, there you go. There's a Sol update. Everyone's gone incredibly quiet. Because
if you look at Noah,
we like to say things, but we just can't.
Yes, can't.
Noah,
can't
of all things, Wikipedia has a list of mobile network operators, and it ranks terrestrial mobile networks in the world based on number of subscribers.
In the world.
Yeah, it's got China Mobile number one.
Is there anything there for CBA, out of curiosity? looking at top level domains before.
Standby.
It has China something or other.
It has Vodafone UK is number two.
Wow.
And it has Airtel in. Just looking at that.
See, why would Vodafone put money into an Australian telco when they've got a cash cow in the UK? That's me being cynical.
Funsies, maybe. Yeah. Maybe the CEO's son. Not for roaming gets purposes. To play with it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
For lols. Airtel in India, the largest. Indian
Indian. They're big on cell phones.
They love them. Absolutely love them. Cool. So, they're the three lists here. But you had T-Mobile as the third largest.
According to Bloomberg.
According to Bloomberg. I wonder what they list that, how they rate that.
Maybe in a I'm assuming the
wiki entries are usually fairly accurate for these sorts of things.
Now, speaking of wiki, just because we can, and we were going to talk about it on the top, but just time passes us by and we get distracted. Julian Assange. Let's not dwell on this. But during the course of the week, you've got to... Did you see his little lecture to the American government on the steps out the window of his little current home away from home?
Mm.
Interesting. But surely he's obviously incredibly nervous about stepping foot outside.
I'd be nervous too if I was in his position.
I did not get nerves from that.
But don't you think the American...
I got a massive ego from that.
Well...
Waving down to the plebs down below.
He puts his thumbs up as he walks out as well. Look, I think... the Americans are probably quite happy with where he is at the moment. He's no longer focusing on America as such. He's now looking after his own self. So he's distracted. So maybe that's their reasoning behind not actually coming out and saying things. But you've got to look at the British government doing things that they've never, ever done before. As in threatening to come in and take him out of this politically safe haven that he's in. So there's a lot of other sort
Did they actually come out and say they were going to do that, though? I thought that was a rumour. No, wouldn't that be an act of war to storm an embassy?
It was a letter, and under British law, they can do that, apparently.
They can. They can revoke the embassy's
because it's on their sovereign turf and all that.
Just that convention would...
Yeah. No, and they've never used it before.
But if Ecuador had nukes, they wouldn't.
They used it once before.
Did they?
Libya. Yeah, there was I think it was a gunman in the Libyan embassy, is that right, Graham, that was firing on people in the street in London.
Ooh.
And they passed the law specifically for that incident, I think.
Retrospectively, because they forcibly went into the embassy and arrested the gunman, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Anyway, watch this space. How long can he stay there for?
Who cares?
I agree.
As long as
the embassy retains its diplomatic status.
Well, I devoted a little bit of time to this in the news, and I don't want to do it to death.
No, it
makes me a bit angry because Julian Assange is claiming asylum. He says he's persecuted. He's quite clearly not being persecuted because he's had countless court dates,
all those police
trials.
At the front.
He's had all those. That's not being persecuted, Andrew. He's had all these appeals in court. The fact that we're hearing him speak publicly means he's not being persecuted. If he's being persecuted, he would disappear. We would not be hearing from him. We would not know his name.
Mm.
He would not be getting half or a tenth or a fraction of the media attention that he's been getting. He's simply a person who is an alleged rapist and somebody who has allegedly sexually assaulted a woman or two women.
Two women, yeah.
And he does not want to face up to those charges. And he's saying, I'm wanted for questioning by the police. I'm wanted because there's an international arrest warrant that's been issued for me. I don't want to be arrested. I don't want to answer those charges. Help, help, I'm being persecuted. I'm going to hide in another country's embassy.
And not only that, and I want to go about my work, which is making people accountable for when they do the wrong thing. So, hello.
The other thing which people need to do is to differentiate between Julian Assange and WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
WikiLeaks is not Julian Assange, and Julian Assange is not WikiLeaks.
But he was controlling the strings at the time of
He's a co-founder. He's a founder of WikiLeaks. He's a spokesperson. He's an editor-in-chief. But WikiLeaks, as an entity, exists and will continue to do work. Some people think it does good work and some people think it does bad work, and that's a completely different debate.
Mm.
But that will go on. What Julian Assange needs to do is to face the criminal charges that are going to be put
against him. But what about since we are going to get into this debate, what about his stated fear is that he'll be extradited to the United States, where there's strong evidence that there is a grand jury that's investigating his legal situation.
Yep.
And that in the United States, he might be facing the death penalty.
So what?
Mm.
If he's broken US law and the US go through all the legal processes, either with Britain, which PS they haven't done, or, again, we're talking about stuff that hasn't happened yet, possibly with Sweden, and he gets extradited to the United States, then everybody's going to go through the processes of law and that's going to happen. If you don't agree with the law, or if Julian Assange doesn't agree with the law...
But Julian Assange isn't an American.
No, he's not an American. No, he's an Australian.
So why is he being threatened with execution by the American government?
He's not being threatened by the American government.
Talk to him at all,
the American government have said, well, whatever's happening over there is happening over there. The American government hasn't said anything of the sort. And regardless
it's
of any
what
of that,
hasn't been said is what's causing all the speculation.
What are facts is that there's an arrest warrant which has been issued for him.
By Sweden.
And he's evading arrest.
Mm.
And he's breached his bail now in the UK,
we know he's
he?
Currently in, and he's breached his bail conditions. Mm-hmm. We know he's currently in the Ecuadorian embassy.
Yes.
We know that now. There are people saying, maybe he's not even in there anymore. But we know that now because we saw him on television, okay?
Well, we know that he was there at,
we know he was there at some point.
Our time, yeah.
Yep. And these are the
or
facts.
Or someone who looked just like him.
If I go and commit an armed robbery on a bank, I can't then run into an embassy in St Kilda Road and say, help, I'm going to be persecuted by the police and the court system because they found out who I am.
Yeah.
That's not what diplomatic asylum is for. Yeah.
That's
not what political asylum is for.
Yep.
That's true, but the things that he's being accused of and the things that he says he's fearful of are not comparable with robbing a bank.
Well, you're talking about criminal offences. In the case of Sweden, they're talking about alleged rape and alleged sexual assault. And that is where we stand. That's why the warrants have been issued.
Yeah, but that's...
He's gone through all the processes of law. He's had 4 or 5 different court appearances. He's had all his appeals. He's even been granted leave to appeal, again, based on legal technicalities. He's even been granted bail. He's free to walk around London.
Mm. Well, he's not anymore because he's breached those bail conditions.
Right. And because of his own devices, he's no longer free to do that. But you know, if there was any concern about him being a flight risk, they would have had him remanded in custody. But they've said, no, we'll take you on
your... I think you're looking
at... We look at your undertaking that you're going to honour your bail conditions and you'll stay in London. That's fine. You're free to do what you want to do, pending the outcome of your next appeal. And that's where we are. They're the facts.
Mm. Well, that's some of the facts.
That's some of the facts. Well, that's the facts as we know them. The American government has not said... The American government would have more success applying to have Julian Assange extradited from Britain than they would from Sweden. They've not done that.
Mm. It's infuriating. Separate the two things, WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, not the same thing.
What Lena says, separate the good work or the bad work of WikiLeaks from Julian Assange.
Yep.
Two different things.
It's going to be interesting the next few days, isn't
if
it?
He
the
wanted,
next few months,
if he
maybe
wanted
even
the best
years.
You're right, it is going to take more than a few days for this to all become more clear. It may never, ever become clear what the truth is behind all of this situation.
We should move on.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Metro.
Metro trains.
They used to be trains.
Metro interface. Metro, the underground
rail
system.
What's the other metro that there was? There was a metro
in France. The one Graham
mentioned,
which was
the French company?
The French underground.
The German carrier.
German, name. Yeah. German, that one, as we all point at Lena.
Well, the German cash and carry joint are a Microsoft partner, so that's why there was a uproar there.
Okay, well, Metro was the working title for the new Windows 8 tablet-y-looking site.
The, quote, internal code name for... The new user interface,
the
Windows Phone user interface.
Adam has a long view from the couch on this, and here it is.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Swept up in the touchscreen revolution, Windows 8 might deliver more change than you bargained for. Having spent some time with Windows 8 Release Preview, I think it's fair to say there are 7 stages on the road to Windows 8. Anticipation, alienation, frustration, exploration, discovery, acceptance, and finally, appreciation. How quickly you get there, or whether you even get past frustration, really depends on a few factors. Your view of Windows as a whole, your previous experience with touchscreen devices, and whether or not you approach Windows 8 with an open mind. I actually made it all the way to appreciation within a few hours, but I expect that many people won't. It's easy to hate Windows 8. Really easy. I'd say it's the biggest upheaval since the move to Windows 95. Microsoft has turned my computer into an overgrown tablet, forced Metro on me, or whatever the hell they want to call it today, and stripped away the desktop start menu so I can't find anything. It's confronting, disorientating, and infuriating. It's like sitting down in a car with no steering wheel. At this point, it's easy to throw your hands in the air, call down curses on Redmond, and swear you'll stick with Windows 7 until the day you die. But if you decide to work with Windows 8 rather than fight against it, you'll find that it does actually have a lot to offer. But some people will need to work very hard to get that far, and it's more effort than perhaps they feel they should need to make for something which should have been a smooth transition from the well-respected Windows 7. You know you're in for some trouble when Windows 8 automatically launches the Metro interface, which is borrowed from Windows Phone 7. Look closely and you'll realise that the little Metro icons aren't simply icons. They're more like tiny applications. Some people might call them widgets, but Microsoft calls them tiles. The tiles change to offer you updates at a glance. For example, the calendar tile displays today's appointments, weather offers today's forecast, and mail scrolls your recent Hotmail messages. Clicking on a Metro tile launches that application in a clean full screen window, which once again mimics the look of a tablet. At first, these single window apps feel like dumbed down versions of Windows applications, but after a while you appreciate that they're actually designed to make it easy to perform common tasks without the need to wrestle with the traditional Windows interface. Remember, people had similar criticisms of the iPad and the iPhone when they first came out, until users adapted to the concept. Of course, I have the distinct advantage here in that I've used Windows Phone 7 and I like it. I've spent some time with several Windows Phone 7 devices over the last few years, and I think Nokia's slick Lumia 900 is my favourite. So when I fired up Windows 8, the tiled Metro interface felt familiar and even inviting. Things change once you try navigating Metro and accessing advanced features on a non-touchscreen device. The triggers for some menus are far from intuitive, even if you know your way around touchscreen devices. The fact I'm a Mac user actually helped a bit, because Windows 8 also relies on the idea of hot corners, letting you trigger actions by moving the pointer or your finger to the corner of the display. Windows 8 does feel cumbersome on the desktop machine, but my time with Windows Phone 7 assures me that Metro will certainly feel much more natural on a touchscreen device. As someone who appreciates both iOS and Android on a tablet, I can certainly see the potential of Windows 8 on a touchscreen when you want to get things done without fighting with the traditional desktop. The next generation of desktops and notebooks, in particular lightweight Ultrabooks, will be designed with touchscreens in mind. With a touchscreen display, you'll be able to tap and flick your way around Metro just as you do a tablet. Of course, that's a little consolation for those of us who are stuck struggling with a keyboard and mouse. When you do eventually find the traditional desktop, you'll discover that Microsoft, in its wisdom, has killed off the iconic Start menu, a change likely to flummox a generation of Windows users. You can adjust over time, and you can pin extra items to the taskbar to compensate. But older PC users will definitely struggle and need someone to hold their hand. Future generations might look back and question why we ever needed the Start menu, but that doesn't make the transition any easier. The real problem with Windows 8 is just that it's too steep a learning curve for your average person. I don't mean your average tech-savvy gadget lover, I mean your average person who's finally come to terms with the Windows desktop paradigm and fears change. There's no way, if I ran a large business, that I would roll out Windows 8 on all the desktops. The amount of retraining that you would have to do, the ridiculous amount of calls you would get to the help desk, would cripple your business. People know how to use Windows, and they know that if they move from one version of Windows to the next, that the fundamentals will be the same. Doing this to businesses without offering them any option to disable Metro or bring back the Start menu is really a kick in the guts for organizations that have stuck with Microsoft for a long time. And I won't be surprised if in the not too distant future, Microsoft comes up with some compromise for those business users. I know meanwhile, there are a lot of people working on plugins and workarounds to disable Metro and bring back some semblance of a Start menu to try and help businesses make a smoother transition from Windows 7 to Windows 8. I think Microsoft should have at least given users the option to keep the Start menu and then entice them to use Metro rather than force them. If they come to Metro willingly, then the halo effect might actually see them embrace Windows 8 smartphones and tablets. But the journey to accepting Metro on the desktop is one many people will fear to make, particularly when forced. If handled badly, Microsoft risks having another Vista on its hands. It can't afford for people to hold out for Windows 9. Personally, I admire Microsoft's long-term vision with Windows 8. The line between desktops and tablets is blurring as we shift towards mobile touchscreen devices. Windows 8 is bold, it's brave, dare I say it's even smart. But that's little consolation to people who are staring at Metro in bewilderment or totally flummoxed when they discover that the start menu is just gone. As tempting as it is for home users to employ hacks and workarounds to reintroduce the start menu and kill off Metro, I think if you're going to move to Windows 8, it is worth taking the plunge and working with Metro rather than against it. Its biggest problem, though, is it's just not intuitive enough. I'd say its success relies on Microsoft adding a slick introductory tutorial when the machine first runs, as you find on some Android devices. It needs to run automatically. It can't be an optional extra. A quick walkthrough of the basics and then an easy way to access assistance would go a very long way. Even just a keyboard shortcut which overlays your navigation options would make a huge difference. Simply dumping people into Metro to fend for themselves is a recipe for disaster. I think Microsoft needs to win people over in the first 5 minutes or they'll run screaming from Metro and Windows 8. If Microsoft does win them over, they'll warm to it, they'll evangelise their friends, and Windows 8 could win mainstream acceptance. But if new Windows 8 owners never get past the frustration stage, then Microsoft could have a bomb on its hands and have people scrambling to roll back to Windows 7, just like they fled Vista. To get the most from Windows 8, you need to approach it with an open mind. You need to be familiar with touchscreen paradigms, and you need to be prepared to spend the time learning about new features. To be honest, most people shouldn't have to put in that kind of work just to make the move from Windows 7 to Windows 8. But if you do make that effort, you'll discover that Windows 8 has a lot to offer and you can actually survive without the start menu. With the shift to touchscreen devices, Windows 8 will start to make sense. Yet in the short term, the changes with Windows 8 are so confronting that many people will struggle to come to terms with Microsoft's brave new world.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, a brave new world indeed.
Microsoft's brave new world.
Thank you, Adam.
Yes.
Yes, Windows 8, a lot of people are going to sit tight on 7 for a while.
A lot of people sat tight on XP for a while because they didn't like 7.
I was one of them.
Are there many still out there, XP boxes?
I'm using XP on my netbook here.
I've got an XP.
Yes, there are.
On one of my machines at home, too.
I like XP.
Particularly in business where there was a lot of resistance to moving to Windows 7.
Yeah, well, I think people are going to be there for years to come.
Yeah.
7's a great system, I must admit.
Windows 7 is a fantastic system.
We run everything in 64-bit now, and it's as rock solid as you like, and it just works.
Windows 8 has an attitude problem, I think.
That's one way of putting it, isn't it? An attitude problem.
It is a little bit snooty, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's trying to be all things to all people.
No, it's not. No,
tablets,
it's not. No, it's the opposite of that.
Well, Windows to be for tablets and for desktops.
No. Windows up till now.
Sorry, I'll turn you down a bit.
Has
keep going.
Shut up.
Not that far. It's like that.
Windows up till now has tried to build things to all people. You've got a start menu with a complicated system, or at least a comprehensive system for allowing you to find programs. You can have 400 different programs installed on your computer, and you can find them all and use them all. Now, Microsoft did research and they found that people pinned the 5 or 6 programs that they use all the time to the taskbar and didn't use the start menu. So what they say is, well, we'll get rid of the start menu because most people don't need it.
But they've had the start menu for what, 15 years since Windows 3.1 or 95?
Since 95.
95, yeah.
But the thing is that what they're saying is most people don't need it. But what they're forgetting is that some people do need it.
I need it.
Yeah.
I like it. I like the start button.
But how many programs do you use in the course of using your PC? How many different programs do you use?
Oh, frequently half a dozen, tops.
Yeah, well, that's all right. You can pin those to your taskbar.
Yep.
What about someone who uses 50 different programs? You can't pin them all to the taskbar.
No.
And this is what Microsoft are forgetting. And what they're saying is that we'll design a system that works for most people and forgets those power users that need lots and lots of things.
Mm. I guess you got the desktop. You can drag. So I haven't loaded up the.
Well, but you'd have to do that. You'd have to pile up shortcuts on. Yeah. Or you pile them up as Metro tiles.
Right.
But
it's something we're going to all have to get used to in the next few months. It'll be interesting when the release comes.
Well, no. The alternative is to jump ship and buy a Mac or.
Yeah, but you can't do that if you've got a lot of investment tied up in PC software and vice versa.
Well, yeah. This is the choice you have.
Should we talk about computer games now? Because I feel we need to lighten up a little bit and chill out and do all that sort of stuff. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Uh-oh. Yay! That's Plants vs. Zombies. Yes,
I like it.
I must kill you afterwards. I'm going to throw cabbages at you.
This is such a good game.
This has caused so much shenanigans in our household. It's not funny.
It's such a good game. Such a good game. See, Graham heard the music and has loaded it up as we speak.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
saying as you were just saying then, you want me to lighten up the mood a little bit. I might get this one out of the way first then. Square Enix has posted a $26 million quarterly loss. just to keep it light, Square Enix expects to turn a tidy profit for its current year, but it's off to a terrible, terrible start. The publisher reported results last week for its first fiscal quarter. That's the 3 months ended June 30, which saw net losses of 2.1 billion yen.
What has Square Enix made?
They make Tomb Raider and a lot of JRPGs, and they've got coming out this year. They're hoping that this will help them make a bit more money and maybe make some good money this year. The new Tomb Raider reboot, Hitman Absolution, and Sleeping Dogs, which is coming out next week. A lot of reviewers already have that in their hands as we speak, so that should be pretty good. But yeah, hopefully those three big name titles will help them make a bit of money this year, because otherwise, ouch. They make the Final Fantasy games as well, which I love, especially number 7. Don't send me angry emails about my favorite Final Fantasy thing. It's a thing.
Is that a thing?
There's 10 different games, and you have to sort of pick one that's your favorite, and 7's controversial.
Oh. okay.
Steam, you know Steam.
Yeah.
Lovely Steam. We all love Steam.
They got hacked recently.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting hacked
at the moment, because it's winter here, so all the hackers get bored.
Oh, there's nothing to do.
No, nothing to do. They can't go outside.
Who got hacked this week? We should have a segment.
Blizzard.
Who got hacked this week? No, that was a while back. That was about 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yeah, Blizzard did.
Half a million credit cards got done this week.
But Steam are adding non-gaming software.
Such as what? Like entertainment stuff, movies and sound or something? No.
Well, it sounds like they're going to be turning into a bit of an app store.
Oh, not another one.
Which could be interesting, given people not really reacting too well to Windows 8. Valve will expand the offerings for Steam users to non-gaming software next month, the company announced a couple of days ago. Beginning September 5th, gamers will be able to download software ranging from creativity to productivity tools. Additional software titles will be added after the launch, with developers able to submit their applications through the newly launched Steam Greenlight crowd voting process. So this is really exciting. This is something that I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can submit an application to Steam about this application you'd like to put in the store, and everyone votes for whether they give it the green light or not.
Content is king, though. And
well, that should get votes.
Steam is a game-flavored portal. Really?
Well, I think they're looking at it as it's a digital distribution network that 40 million users are already comfortable with. Why not give them more than just games?
Yeah, maybe.
That's because you don't want people to have to get used to a whole new app store. We're already used to Steam. We've already got it. We already know, you know, a lot of Steam servers are already on our free zones for our ISPs. Why not?
Well,
why not?
Good luck to them.
Work for Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, we've got lots and lots of people buying music from iTunes. Let's sell them other things as well.
Why not? You're already used to the shop. You already go into the shop. If they, you know, just start. If a milk bar you like puts a new candy bar out, you're probably going to give it a shot.
You've got
milk
that bar, distribution infrastructure in place. So,
exactly.
Yeah, use it for other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that could be cool. We could be seeing some really cool things coming through there. The service recently added a free filmmaker tool, which is going really well. And as I just said, has about 40 million users. So you might as well use them while you got them, I reckon.
It's a steampowered.com, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Cool.
And it is a digital distribution hub, where you can get lots of cheap games and get them all digitally and all that. Highly recommend. Very, very good. Run by Valve, which anything that's got the Valve name on it, you know, is a good quality product. Speaking of good quality products, maybe. I think the money that they've raised will make it a better quality product. The Ouya. Do you remember I was telling you about the Ouya? And you were getting excited?
This was the new games console.
It is.
That
it
was
is.
Being funded by on Kickstarter.
Yes, it's been dubbed the People's Console. The Kickstarter campaign for the Ouya has finished.
Okay.
And what did they get?
What did they raise?
The new Android-powered home console.
Hang on, tell us first what they wanted, what their goal was.
Their goal was 950,000.
And they exceeded that by a little bit.
A little bit. They got $8,596,475.
Is that because people are so annoyed with what they currently have on offer in the market that they decided that this is a better option?
Possibly. Or a lot of the people who get excited about the Raspberry Pi might also be, like the tinkerers, might also be
Android-based.
Excited
it's open
about
then.
This.
Yeah,
it's, play it's with it. Android-based, and it's, it looks like... They're saying it's going to be out March 2013, but that seems really, really soon to me.
That's less than 6 months away.
Yeah, but I guess with $8.5 million worth of funding, maybe you can move things along a little bit quicker.
You've got some play out. Hire a lot of developers.
Yeah.
Maybe March is a bit busy for them. Maybe they'll push it into Christmas this year.
I doubt that very much. It'll plug into television sets that you already own and ship with a custom controller sometime by March 2013. I would take that with a grain of salt. Any developer can create games for the system, which will support high definition output via its Tegra 3 chipset. It has a gig of RAM and 8 gig of internal flash storage, and boasts Wi-Fi and Bluetooth support.
Yeah, listen up, Wii.
Listen up, Nintendo. Mm.
Listen up, who's the other one? And Microsoft's Xbox 720 fraud def.
Let's stick to the ones that exist, shall we?
Nintendo, HDMI would be nice anyway.
Yeah. Oh, wouldn't it? Yeah, we've all got in our tellies now.
Yep. The Ouya is also entirely hackable. According to its creators, gamers who root the system, a process described as easy, just like your phone, dear.
Yeah, you just get in there and just tinker with it, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it will not void the warranty, unlike if you were in and flash all of your existing devices. That would be very naughty. This is not naughty. It's fine. They give you permission. Additionally, for those looking to hack the hardware itself, the console opens with standard screwdrivers and has USB ports for custom-made peripherals.
Wow, that is hackable, isn't it?
It's very hackable.
Get in there and have fun, guys.
Yep. No custom screws, nothing like that to worry about. You're allowed to open it up and have a play and do whatever you
None
want
with
it.
None of those silver stickers on the back that says void if removed.
Exactly. Oh. Go nuts, kids. So I think that'll be really interesting to watch. Whether it takes off and is the next big thing or not is you know, it doesn't really matter to
the
me.
The thing I like what about I think it is that someone will come up with a use for it that hasn't been envisaged yet.
Yeah, I like seeing that unfold.
And someone will come out and say, hey, let's try that. Oh, we've got something to do that with. Let's hack this games console and wow, look at that.
And allowing them to hack the software but also the hardware means we're going to see some really interesting things come out, I think. Some very cool shaped things, and people can make really beautiful pieces.
Could be a new media server in it, Dr. Ron. What do you think?
Could be. It's only about this big. It's very small. Yeah, very small. But
another media server.
Oh, the world needs media servers.
We do.
It does.
I've got another not so good news, but I'll end on good news after this one. Nintendo is the worst in conflict minerals survey.
What? What's that mean?
Now,
what's conflict
minerals?
You know how
Apple gets a bad rap for people who are looking for a reason to hate Apple, say that all their minerals and everything that go into making the device are from bad places. And
who would be
the
mean
people
to
die.
Apple people?
Yeah,
is this a bit like, the coffee people that don't get non-organic certified coffee?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that, you know, that Foxconn only make Apple products when in reality Foxconn make everything you've ever touched. And it's not a nice place to work. Research from The Enough Project places House of Mario, that's Nintendo, behind Apple, Microsoft and Sony in reporting and acting on procurement of minerals from the Congo. Nintendo's come last in a survey of efforts to investigate conflict materials in the electronics industry for the second year in a row. The Enough Project's ranking of 24 companies placed Apple in 9th place, Microsoft in 10th and Sony in 17th. Nintendo came dead last, I think. Each company was rated on its compliance with international standards and efforts to clearly identify and hold accountable suppliers of the minerals used in consumer electronics, many of which are extracted in the Congo amid armed violence and human rights violations. So it's sort of getting to that point now where a couple of years ago it was all about where your coffee came from, and now people are starting to wonder where their tech is coming from.
Like copper and tin and minerals that go into making electronic components.
Yeah. What will they worry about next week?
Well, apparently the iPad, the aluminium comes out of Australian mines.
It does. It does.
There you go.
I would say there's less armed violence and human rights violations in Australia than there is in the Congo.
On the other hand, aluminium manufactured in Victoria
is produced using electricity from the dirtiest power stations in the universe.
Oh, so you can't win.
So aluminium in particular requires electricity to refine, and the electricity in Victoria is the worst in the world.
Comes from dirty coal-fired plants.
Not just dirty coal-fired plants, but dirty brown coal plants, which are worse than normal coal plants. Whereas, if you built geothermal power stations right next door to the coal-fired power stations in the Latrobe Valley in Victoria, the brown coal would provide an insulating layer that would make the efficiency of those geothermal stations the best in the world. So if they left the brown coal in the ground, use the geothermal power from the same place where they've got the infrastructure for the same, you know, all the power lines and everything all go to that area of Victoria, Victoria could be the cleanest electricity in the world, and we're currently the dirtiest.
Ooh, interesting. If you could make your purchasing decisions based on having a say with that kind of information, would you? Would you buy the one that's better in that in those terms?
Only if I could be convinced that everything was taken into account, which it never is. So in fact,
all or nothing?
All of these spurious purchasing decisions are, yeah, you look at some factors, not others.
You're right, Graham. You don't know who harvests your coffee. You don't know what exploitation goes along there. You don't know what chemicals have been sprayed on it. You don't know which.
And it might be good from a point of view of labour practices, but bad in terms of environmental practices, or it might be that it might be good in terms of labour practices, but the profits go to fund a drug cartel. It could be, you know, there's so many factors you don't know that, in fact, the thing's useless. On the other hand, I do not buy the cheap milk from the supermarket.
That's good.
Support Victorian dairy farmers.
There's a grab for the promo.
Yeah, Nintendo and the Taiwanese phone and tablet manufacturer HTC were the only two companies to not give any comment on the report. Understandably so, I think they're a bit feeling like they're being a bit picked on.
HTC and
Nintendo. Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that it does end up picking on people unfairly.
I don't know about unfairly. It's not that they have more of the conflict minerals than anyone else. It's the fact that they don't seem to investigate whether they have any at all. Seems to be the problem that the Enough Project has. And I think that's valid to say. You should at least look into it.
There's more to good and evil than conflict minerals.
Yes, definitely. But you should look into it and try and be good wherever you can, I think.
It's a nice thing to aim for.
That's something.
Whether it's possible or not, I'm not sure.
That's something I learnt from one of my favourite works of fiction, Graham.
Did you?
Which is J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And I'm very excited because two of my favourite things are coming together. Lego Lord of the Rings is on its way. Now, the Lego games are super fun. They're very lighthearted, and they've got little Lego characters and Lego figurines being the people that you're playing. But this one excites me because it features 85 playable characters.
So this is Lego Lord of the Rings,
yep,
computer game, as opposed to a Lego Lord,
yes,
of the Rings. Just,
yeah,
like we have Lego
game.
Star Wars on the PlayStation.
Yep.
We're going to have Lego Lord of the Rings.
We are.
On the PlayStation? On what platforms?
It'll be, I think, DS mainly. I think it's generally only on the DS. Or no, that'll be on Xbox as well. I've got a couple of Lego games on Xbox.
Cool.
It'll probably be on everything. I haven't got that information on me. That's really bad that I don't know that. But it's keeping true with its franchise by being the Lego sort of fun way of doing things.
Yeah.
It'll be a lighthearted interpretation of the source material, which is always good when it comes to Lord of the Rings.
Always good when it comes to Lego.
Yeah. With gamers.
Peter Jackson doesn't like doing things quickly.
No.
He likes. Yes.
Yeah.
Making trilogies.
It's making trilogies out of single.
Well,
we're
going to make two films
where there isn't one.
Yeah. Exactly. They're going to make two films out of the latest, and now they've stretched it into a third.
Yeah.
Been watching the video blog. Sorry, I don't mean to digress, but that's always really good. The latest one. They've finished production now. They've gone into post.
Oh.
There's a Lord of the Rings extended cut marathon coming up at the Astor soon.
That's the way you've got to block out 2 days of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've gone into post. What does that mean? They've packed up all their rolls of film and put them
film,
in a post pack and shipped them off by post?
Yeah,
is
send them off to
saying?
Kodak.
By post.
Yes.
Carrier pigeon.
They've finished all the in front of the camera stuff, and they're now gone into the digital world of editing and post-producing, doing all the mixes and stuff like that.
Well, this will encourage children to read the book as well, because it contains some characters that have not ever appeared in Peter Jackson's film adaptations.
Tom Bombadil.
Yes.
I can play Tom Bombadil.
You can.
The much maligned and oft forgotten Tom Bombadil.
Well, they haven't named him specifically, but everyone knows that it'll be Tom
Bombadil.
Fantastic. So that should be really good. I'm really excited about that, actually.
Good opportunity to leave all that stuff out, I would have thought.
Graham. Come on.
Well, you won't win any friends with comments like that.
No.
Why do you hate Lord of the Rings so much?
Why do you hate Tolkien so much? The game follows Frodo Baggins and the Fellowship from Rivendell onwards. So it's not the same canon as the films.
That's the problem. You're going to have to reinvest all the time to watch the films again before you go and see the new ones before they come out in the cinema. You need a refresher.
No, read the book.
Well, yeah, that too.
you should read the book first.
We're all time challenged, though, aren't we? But then again, it takes the same time to read the book as to watch the film, doesn't it?
You can get on your iPad.
Thanks.
Not yet. That's all I've got this week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
I thought I'd end on a nice note of
Lego
Harry Potter.
That was an exciting installment.
I'm very, very excited about Lego Harry Potter. And, Lego Harry Potter and Lego Lord of the Rings.
Cool.
They're both very cool.
Well, we've got the Oddspot Gadget app and website of the week coming up very shortly. I haven't read the email, so I don't know what's in them. So I'm sure they'll be up to club standard or Tech Talk Radio standard if I know Dr. Ron. Or what?
They won't be.
Oh, okay. All right. I do want to just touch on something briefly, and I mean briefly before we go to the break. We were talking about top-level domains a little bit earlier with all the companies and stuff like that. Saudi Arabia, Middle Eastern countries, traditionally are culturally different to the rest of the world. So as a result, what Westerners take as granted, as in, oh, yeah, you know, just, you know, batter it off with it, you know, ignore it. The Saudis take quite seriously.
I can't wait to see where this is going, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, for example, in Saudi Arabia, in Dubai, I think it is, women aren't allowed to drive. Things like that. You know, fairly what we would take for granted here as being straight up and down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, any girls can get in the car and drive. But over there, they
women
can't do that.
Women can get in the car and drive.
Yeah.
Girls can't.
No, women can't. Oh, here, yes, you're right.
Unless they're on the L's.
Anyway, Saudi Arabia has actually, with all these new TLDs coming out, they've had a few issues with some of the TLDs. And they include .wine, .porn, .sexy, .bible, .bar, .sucks, and that's S-U-C-K-S, and .baby. There you go, just a couple. Mm-hmm. And this is the cultural difference that we're seeing across these global TLDs. So I wonder what will become of them. Will they get through? Will they get up because of some factions in the community saying, no, that goes against our principles? There's other ones, obviously, there that would probably be fairly culturally sensitive too, I would imagine.
Yes.
In people's sexuality comes to mind and things like that.
My advice to Saudi Arabians and anyone else who's offended by anything on that list would be not to type them.
Graham, don't.
Would be not to type them.
Oh, gosh.
Whew. Phew.
That was close.
What did you think I was going to say?
Who knows? That's
I don't know. Just don't go there, shall we?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Sony BDP-S790 is a new Blu-ray disc player from Sony. T3 magazine says, the smart Blu-ray player packs Sony's most advanced picture processing to date and introduces future-proof 4K resolution upscaling to Blu-ray.
Whoa.
This means it can take a picture, whether it's standard def or high def, and output an image of 3840 by 2160 pixels if you've got a compatible display.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're after a compatible display, it'll set you back anywhere from... Toshi's got a TV, it's about £7,000. Sony's got a projector that's about £17,000.
I saw them at NAB. They're very impressive, but there's no content out there for them.
This is it. This is the problem.
H.265 will be the way to go, but if our broadcasters are anything to go by, don't hold your breath and don't buy anything.
We spoke about it in the news.
H265.
The new Blu-ray player has got built-in Wi-Fi, two HDMI outputs, two USB ports, and an Ethernet port. Every electronic device in your house should have an Ethernet port. This is good news. With Sony's Media Remote app, you can even control the BDP S790 with an application written for both iOS and Android devices. You can sit on the couch with your iPad and control your...
That's cool.
Your Blu-ray player.
Big remote.
Why didn't they put this in a new PlayStation?
You won't lose it either.
No, you would not. An independent review at whathifi.com says the new Sony Blu-ray player is superb, positively reveling in great features, excellent picture performance. Sony has definitely got a winner on its hands.
Oh, something bad's coming up. I can feel it.
Well, not in this little segment. RRP's $429.
Ow!
Yeah, it's pricey.
Yeah, it was.
For an obsolete optical display.
You pay your money, you get your chances. Andrew, for more information, go to Sony.com. That's our gadget, the BDP S790 Blu-ray disc player.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.googleearthanomalies.com. Further to our news article at the start of the program about discovering
about
pyramids
this.
By yeah. trawling Google Earth, GoogleEarthAnomalies.com. This site contains postings and satellite images from the Ultimate Anomaly Collection of over 5,000 Google Earth placemarks. The placemarks consist of anomalous earthworks, unusual topography, geographical anomalies, geological anomalies, scientific anomalies, mound sites, extraordinary sites, weird sites, and unexplained features. Some strange
crop rings.
Yeah. Some strange things include what Andrew said, crop rings. The possible discovery of new pyramids in Egypt, which Egyptologists are looking at the moment. The series of linear features along shorelines and inlets of the United Kingdom, and circular features in a number of countries around the world, possibly ancient burial mounds. So if conspiracy theories are your thing, it's an interesting website.
We thrive on them in here.
Oh, yeah, to waste some time on. That's our website, Andrew. GoogleEarthAnomalies.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
Thank you, Shem, for this week's suggestion. The application of the week is the DSLR controller.
Yeah, we've all got one of these. I think this is a good idea, actually.
Control your Canon EOS digital camera with your Android device.
The
DSLR controller is the first and only app that allows you to fully control your Canon EOS digital SLR from your Android device with nothing more than a USB cable. No computer or laptop is required. No Wi-Fi is required. You don't have to root or jailbreak the device. All you need is a compatible mobile device, a compatible camera, and the right USB cable. It's still in beta, but it already gives you remote live view, remote control of the most common settings, remote capture, focus, and zoom control. Shem, who contributed this week's app, says, "I've been using and testing this, and it really surprised me. Keep in mind it's beta, but it works pretty well." So for more information, have a look at DSLRcontroller.com. We can find it in the Google Play Store.
It's something to have a good tinker with, I think.
And it'd be good when it's really high up on a tripod.
Yes.
And you want to
Or remote to a degree. Even higher, where you can't actually get to it. On like a hothead.
Well, no, it needs a USB cable.
Yeah, but you can have a long USB cable.
It'd have to be a really long one then.
Yeah.
If you're thinking of being in a helicopter.
Oh, not quite that high. That'd be really long.
That would.
So, yeah. So, where's the site?
DSLRcontroller.com. It's also in the Google Play Store, the DSLR controller.
Cool. Okay.
Cheers. Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ah, the meatloaf!
Bond. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Iran is threatening to sue Google for removing the name of the body of water to the country's south from its online map.
What was the body of water to its south?
Well, let me explain. Iran has always called the waterway the Persian Gulf, but neighbouring Arab countries call it the Arabian Gulf or even just the Gulf. Recently, Google removed the name altogether from its online map. And if you go right now and have a look at maps.google.com, have a look at that part of the world, and there's no name there in that body of water. Google has removed the name altogether. Iran says it will lodge a complaint or could even sue Google if it does not correct its mistake. Iran's foreign ministry says historical evidence shows the water has always been Persian and that Google's action is part of a foreign plot against Iran. Tehran has regularly criticised countries or institutions that don't use the term Persian Gulf. 2 years ago, it warned airlines using the term Arabian Gulf on its in-flight monitors they would be barred from Iranian airspace.
Oh, whoa.
Dearie me.
Can we send them a packet of texters and they can write it in themselves?
Maybe that's what they need to do, is to keep the peace. That's our odd spot, Andrew.
Thank you, and that is the show for this week. Next week at the radio station here, we're going to be installing a 7-second delay button just for everyone else. Just
perhaps what they could do, if they got out in a lot of boats in the Gulf and had the boat spell out the name that they want it to be.
No more advice for our Middle Eastern friends, thank you.
And then when the Google satellite takes us next picture, the name will already be there and they won't have to write a link.
Bye.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.